Okay, and here's an example. This is the Ribble-Lewick area. Right to the right across the river is the old wire mill. This is Burlington. That is former highway, State Highway 35, which eventually made it all the way down to West Virginia. And a lot of the folks that came to Muncie during the boom of the gas boom came up Highway 35 right through here. So it's a historic area. People used to be able to go across the river on the Jackson Street Bridge to work at the wire mill, or they can go 8 blocks south to the Ball factory. And they could enjoy the river. Unfortunately, by the time we got involved, the sewers were combined. There was a combined sewer overflow for this neighborhood, and it had weeded over. The homes were abandoned along the riverside. They lost the river along the way and had a pollutant source at the same time, which we were mandated to fix. So what we did in a creative way with using this financing and alternative delivery method, we were able to take the stormwater out of the combined sewers, close off the overflow. And what we found along the way, too, what might be interested, there's a lot of pollutants in stormwater. It comes out of the sky, it's pure enough. But by the time it hits your roof where those 3 dozen birds were there an hour earlier, or goes into that pond where all the geese were, or people with fertilizers, or anything on the street that comes into our inlets, by the time that gets into the White River, it's a dramatic impact. So not only we're using these savings not only to get a neighborhood feature, but we're also to clean up stormwater, which that'll be the next great thing that's going to have to the people that will run the district after we retire. So that is a wetland feature. I think we got another slide on this. Right, so again, to the north, to the top is the Kitzelman wire mill facility, and we're able to take, that was all weeded over, abandoned houses. We're able to take, we cleaned all that up. We're going to have a connection to the Cardinal Greenway Trail on the left. A park area. That little structure on the left there looks like a box. That's the old overflow. We're going to plug that, and we're going to make that into a kayak launch facility. The Smutsey Sanitary District, we're doing a study right now with our friends at Flatland Resources on taking out some of the low-head dams in the area that would allow more use of the river with kayaking and things like that. So this will be a very key access point. And the mayor was pretty involved in this one, so that was a good thing. So that's one of our four projects I wanted to share with you today. This one, again, we have the levees. And even though the Army Corps designed and built the levee system up to standards in 1947, and almost nothing's changed, now it doesn't come anywhere close to meeting the new Army Corps standards. So we're having to go back. And they also increased their flood insurance rates by tenfold. So we're going back in and trying to systematically upgrade our levee to meet the new Corps standards. Now this, to the right is the Jackson Street underpass on the railroad. Up and to the right is the wire mill. And because the city and other groups have been able to buy all the property east of the underpass on Jackson Street, we were going to have to spend millions of dollars. In fact, we're not even sure we ever could have gotten the levee to the east of this area. That's Phillips Pool. To the east of this area ever to get FEMA certified, because the two railroad tracks made up part of our levee system. And FEMA has a new rule that if the railroads, what they sit on, are not FEMA standard ready, it won't qualify as a protected dam. And we asked them, they said they've never had a railroad cooperate on that in the United States. So what we did, and again, creatively, we had our consultants, we found high ground. That's the old flea market building right there on the right, bottom right, and a couple other. We're going to, because the city owns much of where the Kitzelman's going to be developed, We acquire those properties there. We can build a new certified levee, a lower level levee, and everything to the west of this, up to the charter school on Washington Street, will be protected as we upgrade levees. So we save millions of dollars by being able to construct a tie-off levee and not have any structure that needs to be insurable to the east of that. Eventually, you get to high ground. So that saved us a lot of money and part of the Kitzelman job. And by taking some of the land, like the old forge plant, in that area to the east, we're able to have a good disposal site for all the dirt that we're going to dig up when we replace and upgrade a lot of sewers over the years. Okay, now this one's another project that we had to do. It's mandated both by FEMA and by EPA. This is the McKinley neighborhood, Muncie Central High School. It's to the bottom of the screen, a couple blocks. This, remember that when Phil showed you the concrete dam that they built like 100 years ago? Well, unfortunately, that's been scoured out. Trees are now growing through it. It's not cost effective to keep that concrete dam. So we had to build a new levee in place of that between Elm Street and Madison Street on Myrtle Street, White River on your left. Martin Luther King Bridge to the north, Elm Street Bridge over here to the bottom of the screen. So again, we tried to be creative here, and we said we found that a lot of the streets between there and the high school had inlets tied into our sanitary sewers, 64 inlets. So the most cost-effective way to take that out of our sewers was to collect that and put it into a detention pond located right here where Myrtle Street is now, but will be going away. We bought up all those homes except for one on the corner of Columbus and Madison, and now we're going to be able to create a retention pond and take the dirt that we dig out of the ground to build the pond to meet IDEM CSO standards and make an earthen levee to meet FEMA standards. This is a rendering that shows that. Again, all those were homes not too long ago. There's the Cardinal Greenway Trail to the north, Elm Street to the south. You can see the dark line will be our new levee. The concrete wall used to be next to the river. That'll be taken down. And there's our retention pond. And the rest of it, that'll be a contractor staging area during construction. The rest of it, that's going to be given to the city for some sort of use that they can best determine. Okay, and this is our last one. This is probably the most high-profile one we did. All the stormwater around here used to go through an 18-inch diameter pipe under the railroad tracks that was built in 1880. Not nearly big enough to have the new hotel, the parking garage, any development downtown, so we decided to fund a large separation project and stormwater control project. We went from an 18-inch diameter pipe to a 96-inch diameter pipe. This is big enough to really address any flooding area in the downtown eventually. And it ends in a water quality canal. Remember we talked about the birds and the fertilizer and the geese? Well, this is a water quality before that water hits the White River. If you go out here to Franklin Street, if you haven't been by it, back out here, take a right. Right before you get to the river, you see our canal. We're already seeing neighborhood revitalization because of this, and we're very proud of this. It's working. And the last feature, then I'll turn it over to Cecil. As part of the canal to the left, we got a good start on the cultural trail. That'll be a big part of Muncie's future and connectivity. And the Rundell folks who helped us design the canal, it will be a big part of this. So if Cecil Penland will come on up, I'll turn it over to you. Thank you.
Cecil's going to explain how all these trails work as an integrated system into the community, connecting different sectors.
Good morning. My name is Cecil Penland. I'm with Rundell Ernstberger Associates. We've been actively involved in assisting Muncie in planning for well over 30 years at this point. About a year and a half ago, we were approached with a very exciting project and the idea of connecting the various cultural and educational and natural amenities that are located throughout the community. And in doing so, through what we're going to call the Muncie Arts and Culture Trail. This was a partnership that was started by the Muncie Redevelopment Commission, the Muncie Arts and Culture Council, the City of Muncie, Ball State University, and the Metropolitan Plan Commission. There were specific goals that we set out with when we started this process. It was to connect the city's arts, cultural, neighborhood, and educational destinations, all of them. Create an economic driver for future development possibilities. Establish stronger community identity that reinforces the city heritage and that is unique to the City of Muncie. Catalyze new development and community revitalization, and then again provide a recreational amenity and also a commuter amenity that allows people to get around the city in ways other than through a vehicle. From the very early beginnings of the project, we started by doing in-depth inventory and research on corridors throughout the community and figuring out which corridors would be the most appropriate to place the Muncie Arts and Cultural Trail on. And we kind of settled on kind of three main or four main components of the trail. Those included a downtown loop, where we chose specific corridors that we feel have a lot of opportunity for reinvestment, and also just for circulating around the community and providing connections to the Kitzelman property, connections to Muncie Central High School and Minnetrista Cultural Center, connections down to the southern side of Muncie and Heakin Park, on back to the Cardinal Greenway, and connections over to Ball State University as well and through the campus. In looking at how the trail becomes developed, this is not the typical trail that you see in Muncie today. It's not the White River Greenway, and it's not the Cardinal Greenway. Not that there's anything wrong with either one of those. Those are both wonderful amenities. But what we're talking about here is an urban trail. It's a trail that's intended for families and joggers, bicyclists, anybody to be able to negotiate the city streets and the community without being in a vehicle. We want it to be something that's it feels safe for a family, parents and their young children to travel on. And we accomplish this in a couple of different ways. There are two types of paths that we look at when we look at something like this. One is called a separated use path. Essentially, a separated use path separates the people who are on bicycles or the people who may be jogging from those who are just walking. This is most appropriate in like a commercial part of a city where you have commercial businesses that are located immediately adjacent to the trail. For instance, you wouldn't want to be riding your bike, or you wouldn't want to come out of a downtown business and get clipped by a bicycle, so we try to pull people away from those. The other type of path is a shared use path. A shared use path combines the uses, and this can easily be done in residential neighborhoods or in areas that are less traveled, perhaps the connection between Ball State University and the downtown, and on maybe in portions that connect down to the southern part of Muncie. I wanted to show you just a few before and after images of what we think this trail could look like as it becomes developed. This is at the intersection of Main and Madison Street. Actually, it no longer looks like this. Just about a year ago, the city of Muncie and CEP worked together to create what is now Cornerstone Park. And the long-term plan is for the Muncie Arts and Cultural Trail to travel along this as well. So this is a rendering of what that will look like when it's completed. And it also provides a great connection to the exciting potential that's occurring across the street as well. Providing a connection to Ball State University is something that the Muncie community has needed for a long time, a physical connection so students can walk or travel easily between the downtown and Ball State University. So what we're looking at is how we can use corridors between here and Ball State to make that more easily obtained. This is Riverside Avenue. This is an existing condition. This is near the intersection of Dix and Riverside. And then this is a illustration of what could happen in order to make the cultural trail come alive. I wanted to talk just briefly about why a trail like this is beneficial to a community. And a good case study is the Indianapolis Cultural Trail. The Indianapolis Cultural Trail is 8 miles of trail that is similar to what we're proposing here for the Muncie Arts and Culture Trail. It connects the city and the region. It connects the different cultural districts within the community. It enhances mobility and walkability, and it has spurred economic development. And I'll talk a little bit more about that as I move through these slides. Design that creates a more sustainable, walkable, and healthy city makes economic sense because it discourages people from driving. It encourages retail adjacent to the trail. And it's much more pleasant for somebody to experience. You can see here that there's a very unique character to this trail. When somebody is on this trail, it's visually distinct and they are aware that they are on the in this case, the Indianapolis Cultural Trail. One of the key things we want to do is make it, again, more safe for people to commute and to travel. So we look at how we can redevelop intersections, redevelop streets to make them more comfortable for people to travel on, and that includes narrowing down intersections so people have less distances to travel across roadways, really giving more emphasis on the pedestrian and less emphasis on the vehicle. And then the other opportunity with trails such as this is the implementation of green infrastructure. In Indianapolis, in Indianapolis, stormwater planners were implemented along the entire length of the Indianapolis Cultural Trail. And since it's been completed, there's been studies completed that show about 4 million gallons of stormwater is diverted out of the city's storm sewers on an annual basis. So the effects of a trail such as this can be much greater than just recreation or just beautification. It's also an economic and a sustainable benefit. And then it's also an opportunity for the incorporation of public art. Public art is something that has been shown to be a driver of economic redevelopment, and also to be it's something that makes people more engaged in the environment as they travel along something like this. So in Indianapolis, anywhere we could, we worked with local artists and we incorporated artwork into the Indianapolis Cultural Trail. And then I just want to show you a couple before and after photos. This is Massachusetts Avenue. This is the condition that was existing, I would say, probably in around 2007, maybe. This was the artist rendering that was put together as we were preparing design documentation, and then the after photo of what was actually constructed. The next couple of photos are good examples of the economic benefit that can come with the trail. This is an existing condition photo of Virginia Avenue. Virginia Avenue connects downtown Indianapolis to Fountain Square. Since the Indianapolis Cultural Trail has been in, there's been a large amount of economic reinvestment. And you can see what has happened in this one location just over the course of the trail being implemented. One more photo, again on Virginia Avenue, just showing kind of the before and after effect. And one more of Virginia Avenue as well. And then finally, how the Indianapolis Cultural Trail was funded. It was a significant investment in Indianapolis. It was a $63 million trail. However, it's important to note that none of that was local tax money. $35.5 million of it was from TE money and Tiger money, and $27 million of it was from private donors and foundations. It's also important to note that the $63 million was not the construction cost of the trail. That includes maintenance endowment and some other items that go for the long-term care of the trail. And then just to show the economic benefit of the trail, since a recent study was completed by the IU Public Policy Institute, and since the trail has been done, property values have increased 148%, or over $1 billion in value. And over half of the businesses that are adjacent to the trail have seen an increase in business as a result of the trail. And trail users are estimated to spend approximately $3.56 million annually while on the trail, and that's anticipated to increase as well. The Indianapolis Cultural Trail has actually become a case study for trail development all across the country and actually around the world. It's known for its high quality and innovative design. And it's received a significant amount of recognition. And then just getting back to the Muncie Arts and Cultural Trail, this is kind of where we've been to date, steps 1 through 4. We started in the fall of 2014 with the project initiation. We did go through our existing conditions analysis and alternatives development. Today, we're beginning to talk about construction plan preparation in hopes of how we can begin to implement the trail. So, hopes are that in the near future we'll be starting to look at preparing some construction documentation so that we can position ourselves for a Tiger grant and secure some monies to actually implement this thing. So thank you everybody for your time.
Thanks, Cecil. Hopefully people can understand how there's an integration between the cultural trail and the Kitzelman Trailhead. As you can see, it's important to connect these four key quadrants of the community: Ball State, Minnetrista, the downtown area, and the Kitzelman Gateway area. I kind of want to digress a little bit. The city of Muncie's had a big change. We were a big factory community. This is what we made up a lot of our community at large, these type of workers. And the employment base up until 1980 was really in these areas. This is a heat map that reflects the major industrial employers. If you look at the community today, the major employment sectors are Ball Hospital, the university, and the downtown area. If you look at the traffic counts, and we are an automobile town, but we want to become a pedestrian-oriented community, the highest traffic counts in and out of the community actually occur on McGalliard, Northwest, State Road 32, on the east, Kitzelman Gateway. The majority of these folks are driving, you can kind of see this funnel, through the Eastern Gateway. A significant portion of these are people that are driving from the eastern parts in Randolph County, Winchester, Union City, and they're employed by the hospital or the university. They're no longer employed in the big factories. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have factories. It's just that that's where the sector has changed. So if we go back to this vision of trying to make an Eastern Gateway for the city of Muncie, a city gateway, not just a trailhead, and you look at the importance of key things that go to things that a lot of folks look at. This is actually from the National Housing, I think, Building Institute, where they pulled people across the nation. They look at relocation, where would they choose to live? And this is the order and what they want. Highway access, walking and joggable communities, sidewalks, park area, playgrounds. If you look at what's going to be presented at the Kitzelman Trailhead and the KPEP site, you're going to realize that all these factors are included. We have a highway, bypass, State Road 32. Walking, jogging are the trails, sidewalks throughout the development, and it's one big, large park. I want to digress a little bit farther. Indiana Steel and Wire, remember this quote. Remember we said that we sent all of our pollutants down the way. Anderson, we got in trouble. John Craddock did a great job of cleaning it up. And there's still a lot of question at times, and people want to know what's happened to Indiana Steel and Wire itself. I'm going to explain in the very simplest, non-technical terms what the cleanup has occurred there, and I am no expert in this, so just bear with me. When the Indiana Steel and Wire was in operation, they had a lot of sludge in their operations, and one of the things they discovered is that they could send the sludge across State Road 32 under the railroad track to a place called Mox Pond. Mox Pond actually was an old lime quarry. This is actually a picture of the quarry from the 1800s. And what they did is they basically sent it over there because there's a big hole in the ground and everything could settle out, and it was off on the side and everybody could forget about it. And John came along and said, look, it's a bunch of pollution. We've got to fix it. That area, in very simple terms, has been capped. They dewatered it. They move certain materials out into a cap area, and there's a big layer of ballast over the sludge that is left today. And it is safe, and IDEM has approved it for certain things. Similarly, going back to the site, similarly, on the factory itself, the factory floor and some of the buildings had certain contaminants inside the factory itself. And when the factory was raised, a lot of those materials were taken and either disposed of at a disposal facility or these areas that are in blue, and I'm sure you've seen them out there, they're capped areas, big mounds that are mowed, where a lot of the contaminant is encased and is safe, according to IDEM and the Bureau of Water Quality, to do other things. You can't build in these areas. So one's up near Mox Pond, one's on State Road 32, and one's up near the railroad tracks to the north. Okay, another thing that occurred is over time is water, some of the contaminants leached into the groundwater. And that groundwater operation is still continuing to this day. It actually, the plume extended up into the Craddock wetland. Here's kind of a picture of, and this is just not exact, this is a generalization of where this plume was. And what is happening is as the water is being sucked out of the ground, the building that still remains at Indiana Steel and Wire today is a cleanup facility that takes that water that is contaminated, they clean it in their pretreatment by the prescription of John back in the day, and they discharge it legally back to the wastewater plant, and it's continually monitored. The Craddock wetland is kind of a unique thing. Because of John's efforts to help Indiana Steel and Wire and other industries in the community to voluntarily remediate everything. GK Technologies, that owned the land at the time, actually approached the city of Muncie upon John's retirement and asked if they could donate the land in honor of John's efforts. So, John, thanks. And we're going to transition here a little bit. And one thing I want to make sure people, does everybody know what this map is? Someone has to know it. Betty Brewer, of course. The Muncie Action Plan, which used a lot of folks from the community to identify areas that are good or bad, or however they wanted to phrase it, and they tried to identify things. If you look at the Indiana Steel and Wire site over there on the right, there are two little green dots. Those are the greenway. Everything, you know, and the wetland. Everything else in black and red kind of emphasized that Indiana Steel and Wire needed a lot of attention. And I hope that with these next two speakers, or once we move past the NDOT stuff and their great involvement, and the final two speakers that are going to talk about the vision for Kitsilman Trailhead, that someday, that when the paper takes a picture here, it's no longer this, but something much more beautiful that we can be proud of. And now the NDOT person, Brandy, is going to speak to us about actually, they're a very huge dollar investment in Muncie and the Kitsilman Trailhead.
I'm not just the NDOT person. I am the NDOT commissioner. I am NDOT's number one ambassador. So I'm glad to be here today and very excited about NDOT's involvement in this amazing project, and just really excited to see how these plans continue to develop. So as NDOT's number one ambassador, I'm really want to see how today's NDOT can help make more projects like this a reality for more cities and towns in Indiana. Certainly, today's NDOT is much more focused on collaborations with local governments, organizations, and communities, and several people that I've worked with over the years who are present here in this room today, I hope, would say the same thing about their experience with NDOT. We are striving to be much more approachable and interactive with stakeholders in delivering our projects and assisting communities in making their projects come to life. And there are a lot of projects. So just some examples here, the Cardinal Greenway, $26 million investment, NDOT's first transportation enhancement funds project. The White River Greenway, $15 million, including pedestrian improvements to Walnut, High, and Jackson Street bridges. The Kitsilman Trailhead, more than $2 million, including the relocation of the historic Steel Truss Bridge built in 1905 that has been described and shown. And then State Road 32 bridge over White River, the contract letting scheduled for September. So lots going on here, and really proud to be part of all that's going on here in Muncie. So much to be proud of for NDOT, so I could not pass up an opportunity to talk about the wonderful things here. We've invested more than $1 billion in last year in state and local road, bridge, trail, and traffic safety projects. We allocated $220 million to cities, towns, and counties to support local transportation projects. And this month alone, NDOT awarded 65 construction contracts worth $117 million. So just in one month, we've put that out into the economy and investing in infrastructure as much as ever before. So just very proud of all that's going on at NDOT. What I'm most proud of in the time that I've had the opportunity to be commissioner, it's been almost a year now, but prior to that, I've worked at NDOT since 2006, so not new to the agency, just new to this role. And what I'm most proud of this year is the energy and effort and time that we've put into strengthening collaborative partnerships and fostering relationships with many of our stakeholder groups, including MPOs and local public agencies. As we look at new ways of doing things, that means implementing new innovative programs and processes, always aligning with our focus on collaboration. So each year, 25% of NDOT's federal funds are allocated to the local program. In 2016, it's $231 million, and we just announced the call for local projects for 2020, construction in 2020, and $100 million for 2020, and we are accepting applications now for that. As a part of this call for projects, I also had the opportunity to announce that $5 million in funding, this is new, okay, so this is new for NDOT, $5 million in funding from the rural program will be set aside each fiscal year to construct new sidewalks or to upgrade existing sidewalks in our local communities. The new sidewalk program is part of a fresh branding effort for NDOT's alternative transportation initiatives labeled Common Paths. So the sidewalk program, along with our ADA transition plan, our complete streets policy, our U.S. bike route designations, our context-sensitive design efforts, and the National Scenic Byways program will all fall under this canopy of Common Paths, which is really intended to increase the focus on connecting communities, improving quality of life and economic competitiveness, and safely balancing the needs of diverse individuals through different modes of travel. So this fits right in with the announcement that's being made today and certainly what's going on here in Muncie. So NDOT will also be working with other agencies, the Department of Health and the Natural Resources, to identify, develop, and promote the connections among transportation, public health, and outdoor recreation under this Common Paths brand. Bring in a variety of individual programs under one Common Paths brand will result in better communication, better rollout and implementation of these programs. There will certainly be hopefully less confusion and having to memorize things of the various programs and initiatives, and we'll really have consolidated training statewide and better coordination with our local partners and other state agencies. So NDOT recognizes that we are visitors. This is something that I keep preaching to our staff and helping them try to understand and recognize that we're visitors in Indiana cities and towns. Our roads are your main streets. We will solicit and include local input from partners and consider local wishes and needs in our decision-making process. We will be thoughtful and understanding of our impact, because I honestly feel that a strong community makes a strong state, and that we have a role to play in this at NDOT. Common Paths and NDOT are continued focus on collaborative relationships with stakeholders will help deliver a more dynamic partnership, and projects like this one that we're talking about today and the East Side Gateway redevelopment are just fantastic examples of how we can all work together to make this happen. So the City of Muncie and NDOT, we're certainly not the same as we were 10 years ago or even 1 year ago, and I'm very excited about our future together. So congratulations on today's announcement.
I just want to say that anything that's going on here can't help without the Indiana Department of Transportation, and the city appreciates it. Gary Danner's the next speaker, and he's the developer of the Indiana Steel and Wire site. And this is where things, we start to really put the framework on the new picture and this new vision for the next 5 years. Thanks, Gary.
Hey, thanks, Phil. Well, good morning. You're a good-looking bunch of people here today, and thank you so much for coming. It's an exciting day, and it's been an honor to follow the presenters. Is that not impressive? To see what has been done. So we're relatively new to the whole story here. 3 years ago, we began talks about a Kitzelman Pure Energy Park, and what was attractive to us in Muncie was a brownfield, ironically. The reasons that was attractive to us is for the same reasons Indiana Steel and Wire and those before them all came here before. If you look at that picture, it's beautiful. It's building product right within a community, right close to where you live.